Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new film, Strange World, Bones and All, Wednesday, the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, and Disenchanted. I'm also going to be talking about some news in the trailer park and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Bros. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news, and it came late in the weekend, so it was almost last week's news, but it's important to talk about now. Bob Iger is back at the head of Disney. Now, for most people in just the regular world, that doesn't mean anything to you. You know Disney, and you know their product, but you do not really follow who's the CEO or whatever. But this was big news, because I think it was Bob Chapek who took Bob Iger's position when he retired. He had basically brought Disney out of the early 90s, which Disney had a lot of power in the early 90s because it was doing their animated films, and those were kicking off. But he diversified, and he eventually put together a deal to buy Lucasfilm, and he bought Pixar, and he bought Marvel. So he's consolidated all of these massive brands under the Disney label. And he left, I think it was supposed to be in 2000, but he stuck around for a year during the COVID and some transitioning. And it wasn't fully in Bob Chapek's hands until really kind of this year. And people have taken issue with what he's done. There's, of course, the political fallout between Disney and Fort Lauderdale Governor Ron DeSantis about the Don't Say Gay bill. And there's some criticism there on how Bob Chapek handled it and how Bob Iger would have gotten in front of it a little bit quicker. So it kind of came out of nowhere. And Bob Iger was ready to go. He was like, I'm retiring. I'm going to spend some time at home and just sit home and watch the Weather Channel. But now he's back. And now what does this mean? I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I don't even know if consumers are really going to notice this. This is more of like the behind the scenes movie nerd type stuff. I think most of this is internal. And whatever caused that quick rehiring of Bob Iger is probably somewhere internally. And I'm sure that there's something going on. Now, there's been some talk about, you know, Star Wars is going to get retooled and pushed back into the theaters because they kind of backed off. And Star Wars has actually been doing pretty well on Disney Plus because they had the Mandalorian series, and they've got the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, and they've got the Andor series right now. And so I think they're going to be putting Star Wars theatricals back on the book because they want the revenue from theatricals. But there's a lot of people who, you hear the buzz of going, ooh, streaming is going to be numbered, because you're seeing some very grim numbers come out. And the fact that even though streaming's big, it's running at a loss now in a lot of places. But part of this is, even though Disney Plus has been around for a couple of years, they are still figuring out the most efficient way to deliver and to work through this, and who needs to do this and where redundancies are. People think before streaming there weren't any Disney shows. Well, there was this whole Disney Channel, but I think they're completely abandoning cable because cable is dying fast. And they're throwing everything behind Disney Plus. So Disney Plus is basically going to be the outlet that Disney Channel on the cable box, and all those direct-to-DVD movies that they produce, they're just finding a way to reconcile that business and sort of shave off the physical media section. Now, the next piece of news, the box office. And I mean, Black Panther did great. It won second weekend. It dropped a huge 60-some percent, but that's kind of in line with other Marvel movies. The Menu came in number 2 with $9 million, which is above what they expected. The big surprise was The Chosen. Season 3, episodes 1 and 2 had kind of a Fathom Events type thing. And it came in number 3 with $8.8 million, which isn't massive numbers for anything. But that's actually a really good run for a faith-based niche audience. But then She Said came in, and it bombed with $2.2 million for 6th place, which is notoriously known now as being one of the worst openings for a movie of its scale ever. And that's never a good thing to be known as. So a lot of people have been remunerating and publishing think pieces this week about why did she set bomb? If you don't know what that movie's about, because I didn't cover it last week, you know why? This is probably part of the reason why it didn't do well. They didn't screen it widely. And not a whole lot of people know what the movie's about. It's not like there's this show coming to Hulu called Welcome to Chippendales. Well, you know what that's about? It's about the Chippendale strip clubs. It's pretty obvious what that's about. She said does not necessarily telegraph what the story's about. This is docudrama of the investigation in the press that led to the revelations about Harvey Weinstein. And a lot of people are like, what? Is this good for Harvey Weinstein? And there was somebody on Twitter, I'm not even going to say who it was because I don't want to publicize this person. But they made, and I can't say his point is wrong, although it was kind of a crass thing to say. He's like, well, there is somebody who's really good at getting exposure for a small film like this, but unfortunately he's in prison right now. This is exactly the kind of movie that Harvey Weinstein could have anointed and moved up. The thing with Harvey Weinstein is he was toxic to a lot of people around him. And just because you were part of Miramax and you got your film distributed then, sometimes he would just bury stuff. I mean, he was cutthroat. He had their movies like The King's Speech and The Artist that he sort of brought to the top of the level, but there was a lot of casualties along the way. So I'm not defending Harvey Weinstein. But the thing was, she said, is it's not a movie people want to see. There's something to be said about people wanting escapism going to the theaters. And that's why a lot of award films this year and last year are struggling because, now I'm not saying they have to be uplifting, but they're not entertaining. You know, even something like Till, which I thought was a great movie, that is not an easy film to watch. And that's why people want to go see something like Top Gun Maverick or Black Panther. It's uplifting and it's fun and it's excitement. It's part of why you go to the theater. If you want to sit in the chair and cry while you watch something, you can do that at home. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Empire of Light, which is in theaters on December 9th.
Look around you. This whole place is for people who want to escape. People who don't belong anywhere else.
How do you feel?
I do feel a bit numb, I suppose. All these people.
I'm the only one who knows the truth, do you understand me? I'm the only one!
Open the door.
This is from Sam Mendes, and probably the best thing about this movie is the cast. Olivia Colman plays this main character, and she is like one of my favorite actresses on the planet. You've got Toby Jones in there, you've got Colin Firth in there, so you got this great cast, but it does seem a bit navel-gazing because it's about a movie theater, and I'm so tired of that. I'm so tired of because how many movies do we got like this? It's either honoring movie theaters or movies or Hollywood. Just this year, I mean, we got stuff like, you had Blonde coming out. You had The Fabelmans coming out this weekend, which you didn't screen for me. You've got Babylon coming up at Christmas. Okay, I get it. Do we need to go to the movies to hear how great movies are? That's coming out in a couple weeks. The next one I want to hit really quickly is White Noise, which is in select theaters now and on Netflix on December 30th.
What are these children, yours?
That's mine from Wives 1 and 3. There's Babette's from Husband 2. Wilder is ours. We're each other's fourth.
Life is good, Jack. I hope it lasts forever.
They're calling it the airborne toxic event.
It won't come this way.
Will we have to leave our home?
Of course not.
How do you know?
I just know.
Okay, what if it's dangerous?
Evacuate. This is a Noah Baumbach movie, and I actually had a chance to see this one. I was at the American premiere in New York City about a month ago for this, and had a nice little press conference with Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig and Danny Elfman and people involved. The thing with this movie is it's one of those unfilmable books. And it's tough because if you've read the book, you have an idea of what you want it to be, and it's never going to be that. And if you've not read the book, it seems stuffy and pretentious. So, I mean, this trailer looks intriguing, but it doesn't give you much story to it. But that's kind of the essence of the book. I mean, I've already seen it, so I'm not saying I'm looking forward to it, but I think it's going to be for an acquired taste when it comes out on Netflix at the end of the year. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Bones and All and Disenchanted. Support for Fat Guys at the Movies is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Their products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, with Manscaped's performance package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you, 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. If my math is correct, that's about 14 million balls. Look, whether you're a fit snack or a big fat slob like me, you've got some hedge trimming to do. And, you know, let's face it, life is full of wrinkles, and so are your privates. So personal grooming can be terrifying. But what's great about Manscaped's tools is they're waterproof and they're lightweight. It also has an LED light so you can see where you're trimming your nooks and crannies. Best of all, the Lawnmower 4.0 reduces the risks of nicks and accidents using advanced skin-safe technology with a ceramic blade. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's kick things off with Bones and All. A young woman comes to terms with her uncontrollable urge to consume human flesh and falls in love in the process.
You know, I'm thinking of a bad person. Hey, baby,
baby. All I think is that I love you.
You look like the kind that's convinced himself he's got this under his thumb. Hey, baby. But you pull on one little thread and
I'm ready.
Set you free.
I like off-kilter movies, and there's this sort of subgenre of both romance and horror where it's sort of this horror romance that goes together. And we've seen this with vampire type things, and I'm not talking about Twilight. I'm talking about stuff where it's very pragmatic, where you've got somebody who is a monster, but they fall in love with a person, but it's told on a very down-to-earth level, and that's basically what this is. So basic story is, it's this girl who discovers that she has this uncontrollable urge to eat human flesh. And sometimes, I mean, like literally can't control it. And she's kind of a travels from place to place with her father. He's trying to keep her safe. Well, eventually when she comes of age, he leaves her and he's like, you're going to have to kind of find your own way. And she's sort of abandoned, you know, as this 18-year-old kid. And, you know, that's sad, but, you know, it's not just some deadbeat dad who's abandoning her. He's doing it for very specific reasons. And she ends up running into these other cannibals who are more than just cannibals. They're more than just psychologically disturbed wanting to consume human flesh. There's an innate need in it. And the implication in this movie is they're these creatures that they're basically this mutation that happens, I guess. And she runs into other people like her. One of them is a character played by Mark Rylance. And look, I love Mark Rylance. He's like, honestly, one of my favorite actors walking the planet today. And this is another great performance by him. I mean, he's really the highlight to this because he always plays so weird and off kilter and he's so good at it. But you know, he's not the main character. It's this girl and she's kind of just moves from place to place. And so these characters come in and out of her life. And so when he's gone, I'm like, aw. I want to see him back because I found him more interesting than she was. And then she meets another, played by Timothy Chalamet, who finally has different hairstyle than what he's had for the last four freaking years in every movie he's been in. I don't care whether it's a sci-fi adventure like Dune or Lady Bird. He's got the same freaking hairstyle. And this is directed by the guy who did Call Me By Your Name, which ironically also starred Armie Hammer, who has his own little issues with cannibalism. We're not going to talk about that right now. But Timothée Chalamet, I'm not a fan of Timothée Chalamet. I think he's just horribly overrated. He's not a bad actor. I mean, he's good at what he does, but he's not that good. It's sort of like Florence Pugh. I kind of put them on the same level, although I think I like Florence Pugh a little bit better. But I look at them as both these trendy, well-known actor with major stands out there. And neither of them are as good as their stands pretend they are. There are people who think, oh my God, Timothy Chalamet, he does the best thing. He comes across as the same character in every movie he does. I have yet to see Timothy Chalamet not be Timothy Chalamet. And I've seen like 10 or 12 movies that he's been in. But anyways, Bones and All, here's the problem with Bones and All, is I love this idea. It's just, it's so down to earth. It becomes boring. They've managed to make cannibalism and murder boring in this movie. And it's just, it's overly drawn out. And I mean, it's at least it's not like borderline pedophilia like you had with Call Me By Your Name. And I know people are going to complain about that, but honestly, that whole situation, the setup of Call Me By Your Name made me uncomfortable. This movie, they fall in love and you see their relationship and, but there's no excitement to it. There's no charge to it. There's nothing about them that makes you want character-wise to fall in love with them. And so, I mean, it's okay for what it is, but gosh, I want a little more meat on the bones, so to speak. So, you know, it's an intriguing idea, but it's told so down to earth that it buries itself in indifference. Bones and All is fine. I mean, it's passable to me, but I'm going to have to say that it just kind of rocks, and I'm being really generous.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Disenchanted. This actually came out last week. I didn't have a chance to talk about it last week, so I thought I'd bump it into this one. In Disenchanted, this sequel to the 2007 hit film follows an animated princess who moved to the real world and now must face a magical threat.
This world feels very different. Is it sometimes easier to live in Andalasia?
Well, I wouldn't say easier. We have dragons and ogre rebellions.
This is not a magic land. It is a land far, far away from my friends.
I wish for a fairy tale life.
Remember, happily ever after, it's not always that easy.
This town is turning into a fairy tale, but it's all gone terribly wrong.
This is a sequel to Enchanted, and Enchanted came out in 2007. Amy Adams was relatively new on the scene. She's done a bunch of stuff, but she was relatively new and relatively young. I think she was probably in her early 30s, but she still had a very youthful appearance to her. There's a benefit your body has to being in your 20s and 30s that it does not have in the 40s. And I'm not body shaming her. I mean, she looks fine, but she's pushing 50. And one of the things about this movie that the original was so fun because Amy Adams was so into the part and she played that naive, excitable princess so well. And that works for a character in their 20s, which is, I'm assuming, how old the character was. When the character's in her 40s, the naivete seems a little stupid. I'm sorry. Her wonder in this one, you're like, you've been living in New York City for 15 years. How do you not know that this is how the world works? I mean, I understand if you're still fascinated by it, but how do you not know this is the way the world works? And it tries to flip the script in the sense that in the original movie, Amy Adams is in an animated world and shows up in New York City, so she's that fish out of water. And in this movie, the fairy tale world spills out into their world. But it has this weird message, and you get this a lot in films, because the writers are all from like New York or in the city. They're like, ew, you gotta work and live in the suburbs. The suburbs are awful. It's the death knell. And I'm like, what's wrong with the suburbs? I've lived in the suburbs all my life. I mean, I live in an Ohio suburb, but I live in the suburbs. And that to me is just a writer's snobbery of, oh, everyone hates the suburb. No, they don't. So I find that a little insulting to its audience. But the other thing is this feels so forced. And there's a whole thing at the end. I'm not going to say exactly what it is, but it hinges upon emotion and memory and connecting to these experiences in your past. And they just kind of just vomit out CGI. And I'm like, you lose any sort of connection to any sort of real emotion because the CGI covers everything. You can't see what's going on. This is such a travesty because Amy Adams is great and, you know, Patrick Dempsey gives it his all. James Marsden's in this and Idina Menzel is there screaming with her mouth open as she usually does when she sings. But, you know, the rest of the movie is just so dragged down with bad writing and poor characterization and crappy special effects and jokes that don't land. For as fresh and fun as Enchanted was, Disenchanted wasn't. I mean, this is too little, too late with an uninspired, forced, and over-effects sequel. Disenchanted sucks.
It sucks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've got Strange World and Guardians of the Galaxy's Holiday Special. You want to hear one of the scariest noises a man can hear? Makes you cringe, doesn't it, if you know where that's going to be going. But if you use Manscaped, the Lawnmower 4.0, you have less to worry about. The Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 reduces the risks of nicks and accidents. It uses a ceramic blade with advanced skin-safe technology, and it's much safer to use on your wrinkly bits. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Strange World. In this Disney animated adventure, a farmer from a distant land must travel to uncharted realms to save his society and his family.
Our entire world is in grave danger. I want you to come with me on an expedition.
I'm not my father. He was the explorer.
I know you were just a kid when he went missing, but now... you're all we got.
Where in the world are we?
Ethan, you brought the dog?
Sorry!
We are clearly in uncharted territory.
It's so strange because there's parts of this movie I love. First of all, the animation is gorgeous. Because the whole story follows this guy who, his father was a famous explorer and gets lost. And he used to explore with him, and then he became a farmer and farms this plant that basically generates electricity. And that's what fuels their society. And when they find out that the plants are dying, they said they have to go find the source of the plants and the roots and try and save the plants and make sure that they don't die. And so he ends up on this adventure, and they have to go past these mountains. It's sort of like this land that's surrounded by these mountains, and have never been able to get across. And that was the whole goal of his father, was wanting to climb over the mountains when he got lost when the main character was younger. And so, I mean, is it Earth? Is it not? I don't know. I mean, but it's like this different world. And they end up traveling through the mountains to find a way to the other side where they think there might be, you know, this stuff to be saved. And they're also trying to go into the earth to solve the puzzle of why these plant roots are dying. And when they get down there, it's a whole different world with these bizarre creatures. And I mean, it's visionary. And it reminds me of like these old covers of sci-fi magazines from the 50s, where it's, you know, it's a completely different world with very different plants. You don't just have trees. This is not like an episode of Stargate or Star Trek The Next Generation where every place that they go looks like British Columbia. This is a gorgeous looking movie. It's got amazing animation and it's beautiful. It really is. And I mean, the story itself is fun. It's sort of a play off these old adventure magazines, you know, stuff like from the 40s or maybe even earlier than that. These old, kind of like these jungle adventures that they'd have. They did these movie serials like these. I mean, they're cheap and not very well done. But it's kind of what Raiders of the Lost Ark is based on. And that's the sense of adventure they're going for. Or, you know, stuff like The Phantom, if you remember. That was a movie, but it was also a comic strip, really. And so there's some elements to this movie that are gorgeous and well done and exciting. But there's some problems with the writing. Some of the motivations don't quite land. It feels like the script probably could have baked a little bit longer. They think they took it out before it got that nice golden crust on it, you know? It just doesn't quite click. And there's something else about it. And the movie's very boy-centric. If you look at the Disney animated films, the ones that do best, especially in recent years, what are they? They're stuff like Frozen, Encanto, Moana. They're not Disney princess movies because, I mean, Encanto is not really a Disney princess. But they're very female-centric stories. Fairy tales tend to be female-centric stories. especially the stuff that Disney has curated over the years. And this one's not. This one's much more male-centric. And you know, that's a little window into probably part of the reason that Lightyear had trouble this summer is because when you look at Lightyear, it's very much a male-centric movie. It's a boys' movie. And ultimately in that movie, there's a conflict between the father and son. And in this one, same thing. You've got this conflict between a father and son. Now, that works in a Star Wars movie. But in Disney animation, those are not the stories that sell. It's the stories of a girl with a dead mother. That's basically how that works. But I think it's going to struggle because of that. And I don't know what to... I mean, that's just the way it is. There's so many other gee whiz, shoot 'em up, excitement, adventure type content out there for kids nowadays that the boys, this is not like you have to see this movie. And on top of it, like I said, it's got some wrinkles. It doesn't quite work 100%. But, you know, it's a fun movie. It's visionary and it's exciting. I enjoyed watching it. I really did. I had a good time watching it. It just, there's just something missing. There's just a little bit of that Disney magic that isn't quite in there yet. And I think it'll be fine. But, you know, I mean, it's good to take kids to, but yeah. You know, I mean, the look of the film is brilliant with a positively Disney-esque story. But it still has a little bit of a spark missing. I don't know what it is, but there's a little hole in there. And you know, I wish they would have plugged that hole before the movie was finalized. But still, I'm going to say Strange World is a fun time and an exciting ride for the family. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the Guardians of the Galaxy's holiday special. In an attempt to make the perfect Christmas for Peter Quill, Drax and Mantis do something really stupid.
I just saw on the calendar that right now on Earth, it's almost Christmas time.
We don't have time for trivialities like Christmas.
But Peter's so sad about Gamora being gone. Maybe if we go to Earth for a really wonderful Christmas gift, it would make him happy. Something special he will never forget.
What about someone special?
We're looking for the legendary Kevin Bacon.
I can completely get behind these Marvel specials that they've been doing because they did that with Werewolf by Night, and they've got this with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And basically, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, if you're going to make a full feature film that people are going to go to the theaters, you got to have a full story, and it's got to further the story of the overall Marvel Cinematic Universe. But with these things, you can do these one-off stuff that doesn't actually propel the overall Marvel Cinematic Universe storyline. This is just a silly little story about Drax and Mantis being idiots. And honestly, I love the Guardians of the Galaxy. I love all of them, and I love their interaction. But the interaction between Drax and Mantis is really one of my favorite ones. They have the weirdest but most hilarious chemistry. And the actors are great in it too. And they work well together. And they both go over the top. They're like adolescent children, you know, not in control of their own emotions. And to be honest, this entire movie, it's like an hour long. So it's longer than just a 20-minute bit. I mean, it's probably about 45 minutes. And it's not meant to be a story about all the Guardians of the Galaxy, although they do show up here and there. It's really Drax and Mantis' story. And they're stupid. They're like, hey, let's go kidnap Kevin Bacon. And you know, here's what's so funny. I'm from Ohio, and I go to Kings Island, which is a big amusement park down near Cincinnati. Every year, I take my kids. And there's an old Brady Bunch episode. And this ties into everything. Just go with me on this. There's an old Brady Bunch episode where Mike and Carol Brady take their kids, and they're from California. They fly them for some strange reason. They leave all the amusement parks in California and fly to Cincinnati to go to this amusement park, you know, down in Cincinnati. And it's fun because I've been there, and I was in the park in the 70s, so I remember what it looks like. And so I never watched the episode in its entirety. I'd seen clips and stuff here and there. And so I watched it this weekend. And Robert Reed was in that. And I said, you know what would be hilarious is if they took this Guardians of the Galaxy thing and made a whole series. I would watch a whole series of Drax and Mantis doing stupid things and messing up because they're naive and dumb. And then at the end, they've maybe recreated their own Mike Brady. And, of course, Robert Reed's no longer with us. But get somebody like Gary Cole, who played him in the movie, and basically have them, and Peter would have to pull out a Mike Brady and say, okay, explain to them what they have to learn this week. I would watch an entire series of that, because that would be hilarious. And that's kind of what I feel this is almost launching. And they could go and do stuff with Rocket and Groot, sure. But, you know, Drax and Mantis, they're funny. I love them. So, yeah, I mean, this is a fun little adventure with everybody's favorite misfits from space. But it's keeping with the whimsical yet heartfelt tone of the films. The Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I've got a review of Wednesday and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Bros.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel.
The Manscaped's performance package also includes the Weed Whacker, which will trim unsightly nose hairs and ear hairs, easily cleanable, lightweight, waterproof, and it helps you out when you got hair growing out of weird places. And we all know the older you get, the weirder their hair gets. Look, the holidays are coming up, so you can order one for every guy in your life, because everyone can use a little trim. And you don't want to share these, you know, they're personal items. So with the promo code FATGUYS at manscaped.com, you'll get 20% off and free shipping worldwide. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap things up with the reviews and talk about Wednesday. This Netflix series follows Wednesday Adams as she tries to adjust to an enchanted boarding school while solving a decades-old mystery.
People like Dalton shouldn't be allowed to procreate. Getting expelled was just a bonus.
You will love Nevermore. It's a magical place.
Where I met your mother.
Finally, you will be among peers who understand you. Maybe you'll even make some friends.
Want to take a stab at being social? I do like stabbing.
By the way, the decades-old mystery. There's a scene in there where she shows something to somebody and they go, well, why are you using this thing that's from 30 years ago? And I'm like, oh yeah, a long time ago, 1992. Oh dear God. I had to tell my wife that. Pop culture has a way of really making you feel old very fast. Anyways, well, it's not completely directed. Like, there's 8 episodes. The first 4 directed by Tim Burton, and he's got the force behind this. It's perfect for Tim Burton. It's even more perfect than something like Dark Shadows. I think Dark Shadows, when he did that, that was a miss because he was trying to make it very similar to what the real Dark Shadows was, the original, which was just a crappy, boring soap opera that was interesting back in the 60s, but
if you watch Dark Shadows now, it's really terrible.
But the Addams Family, you can still watch the Addams Family and get a real kick out of it today. And I think it's neat that they're doing this. Now, of course, it's trendy to do the story of one of the side characters, because Wednesday was never a main character in the TV series because she was just a little girl. It was really Christina Ricci in the Barry Sonnenfeld films they made in the 90s that I think really put a spotlight on Wednesday Adams, because she was so good in that role. And it's great to see Christina Ricci actually show up in this series. She plays a character in it, and I think, oh, that's good. Good for her. She's getting some paychecks from having been known as Wednesday Adams for 40 years or something like that. But anyways, so the story is... it's about Wednesday, and it removes her from her parents because she's in a normal school and the bullies beat up her brother, Pugsley, and so she goes after them and then gets expelled because she put a piranha in the swimming pool while the water polo team was in there. Good for her. And she has to go to this school, so it's sort of like this very creepy version of Hogwarts, and you've got all these weird, you've got like werewolves and sirens and vampires who all go there. And so it's the town, the Nevermore Academy, named after Edgar Allan Poe, but the town is just normal people, but the normal people understand, it's like any sort of relationship any school has with its townies. The townies understand that they get most of their income from either the school or the students or the families. So they rely on that, but they also resent the people because they're different and they're outsiders. But Jenna Ortega plays Wednesday, and she was most recently seen, at least that I know of, in X earlier this year. And she's fantastic in this because, I mean, she looks the part. I mean, she's, I don't know, I think she's in her early 20s. She's like 20, 21 or something. But she's a small woman. She's small and she looks young. So she can pass off as a high school kid very easily. And Wednesday Adams is already tiny. So she's perfect in the role and she's got the great deadpan delivery. And I'm kind of interested in the story. I like the series. It's very much in line with what you'd see in a Netflix series. Netflix really curates a lot of these teen shows. It's almost like a WB type outlet where it's got a whole slate of programming that's aimed at, you know, kids in high school and maybe early college. The stuff that kind of goes over the radar for somebody like me. The reason I caught this one is because it, you know, it's based on the Addams Family. But it also doesn't ruin the Addams Family. It feels like an authentic Addams Family show. And I can appreciate that because I hate it when you take a source material and you adapt it so much it's no longer like the original source material. They don't do that with this. I think they do a really good job with this. You know, so Tim Burton strikes a perfect chord with a positive yet creepy tone. And Jenna Ortega shines as the deadpan heroine. I'm going to say Wednesday rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Bros, which comes out on DVD and Blu-ray now. It's been available on streaming, but it's available on physical media. I never had a chance to see this. They didn't screen it, at least where I could see it locally. And it did so poorly that it was out of theaters so quickly, I didn't even get a chance to go check it out. But I wanted to see it because I think it's a significant movie to watch. Billy Eichner headlines this gay rom-com in which a man in his 40s unexpectedly finds love.
Let me tell you what's progressive now. Being alone.
I love my life. I love my freedom. I love my independence.
That's kind of sad.
That I don't want to be in a throuple. I don't even want to be in a couple.
Oh my God, that's Aaron. He's very hot.
You met a guy?
I don't think I'm his type. He's like gay Tom Brady.
What are you into? One of these ripped idiots with no opinions?
No, I'd like someone who's physically very frail and won't stop talking.
And I bet he's as intimidated by you as you are by him.
I was very frustrated watching this movie because it set itself up to fail. Because all I'd heard about this movie leading up to it was it's the first major studio-backed all-gay cast romantic comedy. I mean, they had movies like, there was that movie Love, Simon that came out a couple years ago that then they made a series out of. Well, that was a gay-centric love story, but I don't think it had a fully gay cast. But like all the main speaking roles, they're actually members of the LGBTQ plus community who are in the movie. And I think that's great. I'm all for inclusivity. And I kept hearing that the way Eichner would talk about this, he's like, well, it's really just a sweet little love story. And yeah, there's gay elements to it, but there's really a love story. It's a love story that you can enjoy. It doesn't matter whether you're gay or straight. And so then I start watching the movie, and that's true. There is a sweet little story there about these two guys falling in love. And it's nice, and it's a... And actually, the guy who plays, and I forget his name, but the guy who plays the love interest, I've seen him as, I've never liked him as an actor. I've always liked Billy Eichner. I just think his shtick is funny. But this guy who plays his love interest, I never liked him. But I actually think he comes across well in this movie. It is a sweet story, and you do like to see these characters come together. But here's the problem. It's going to sound bad to say, but it's also overwhelmingly gay. It doesn't play like a rom-com. It plays like a gay movie. It plays like something that's made for the LGBTQ plus audience, and like that's it. It's not a movie that is really going to reach a straight audience. And it's funny, I was talking with another critic about a month ago about this movie, and I hadn't seen it. And he's gay. He's a gay critic. And even he was like, I don't know if there's, you know, this is something that I don't think is going to click with the straight community. First of all, it's about the gay community or about the LGBTQ plus community. And that kind of gets in the way, because that's not, you want to hear the story. Like Pretty Woman, which is kind of the quintessential romantic comedy, that movie is not about business structure or prostitution. That's just the jobs of those people. They don't even treat those realistically. They're Mickey Mouse, because the whole point of Pretty Woman is to get the two characters together so they can fall in love. And this movie takes so much time to deal with all these different issues. And, you know, I mean, there's a reason it's a rainbow flag, because there's so many different types of people in the LGBTQ plus community. And it's kind of, and on one hand, it's like, it's trying to be like, well, everybody's different. But on the other hand, you've got Billy Eichner saying, well, this is the way gay men are. And I'm like, well, not all gay men, because I know some gay men who are not like you. I know a gay guy who hates going to Pride, because he's like, we try all this time to convince people we're just like them. And then Pride comes along and shows all the over-the-top stereotypes, and that's what gets featured on the news. And there's like elements, like there's a whole section in there where he talks, and it's kind of like a point of the movie, and they, where he's like, it really isn't love is love. We just said that to get us accepted. We're different. And I'm like, well, now you're like getting in the way of your own argument. And this movie shouldn't be about arguing about the issues of the LGBTQ plus community. It should be about two guys falling in love. And it gets distracted so much. I think Eichner felt that there was a lot on his shoulders, so he had to put all that into the movie, but it just there's a lot to process. I mean, there's a sweet story buried in there, but the film tries to tackle the entire LGBTQ plus experience and loses the focus of its own purpose. It's cute, but I mean, it's also very crass, and it's got a lot of sexual, I mean, like very heavy graphic sexual stuff in there. So it's not really date material either. Not certainly not first date material. I mean, gay or straight. You don't want to take a date to a straight movie with this stuff going on with straight couples any more than you want to take him or her to this. So it just, like I said, it gets in its own way. And it's frustrating because it is a sweet story. I mean, I'm going to say it kind of rocks, but it's there's a lot of hurdles at this.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Eternal Daughter and The Inspection. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.